I don't know about you, but I've had college football in my mind. And not just because that this is a college football show, which it is, but given the events that have taken place over, I don't know, the last 24 hours or so, it seems like the perfect opportunity to talk some college football. And trust me, there is no shortage of content to go around, as we have a lot to unpack here on this episode. Michigan imposes a 2-game suspension on head coach Sharon Moore. Seems like the saga is never ending. Is there a potential for an executive order to be passed to help regulate NIL? I'm going to get to that as well. Georgia lands another high-profile recruit, and might I add, a quarterback. I'm going to get to that. And I have expectations for a certain team in the SEC come the 2025 regular season. I will get to that, and plus so much more to come at the end of the episode. But welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, across The Game Nashville Sports Network. If you haven't already, please subscribe to The Game Nashville podcast, wherever you get your fine listening materials. There you will find each and every episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly, in addition to all of our great podcasts that we have going on here at 102.5 The Game. And also, please give me a follow on the socials. I can be found on Instagram. I can be found on Twitter, X, whatever you call it, at Parker_Kelly10. Hit me up on the socials. Give me a follow. I really would appreciate it. But not to keep you waiting too much longer, because I know you know what I'm getting ready to discuss. And that is the Michigan saga. Really seems like it's never ending. I can remember when we first got the news about Connor Stallions, about the illegal sign-stealing activities that were going on in Ann Arbor, and specifically with Connor Stallions. I can remember when that news broke. And here we are. I don't know. I'm checking the calendar, and I'm recording May 5th, 2025, and we're still talking about it almost 2 years later. It really seems like it never ends. But today, we got word that Michigan is self-imposing a 2-game suspension for Sharon Moore because of the Connor Stallions advanced scouting scandal. Now, when I say 2-game suspension, suspension, you may think I'm referring to he's going to be suspended for weeks 1 and 2. The typical person would think that, just going off of the headline. But this is not the case with this suspension. Sharon Moore is actually going to be suspended for weeks 1 and 3. There is some significance to that. So you may be asking, first of all, why he is being suspended for weeks 3 and 4 instead of weeks 1 and 2. That is because the University of Michigan, and I'm sure Sharon Moore had a huge role in this as well, given that it is his suspension, they handpicked the dates in which that he would be suspended, the games in which he would be suspended. So as it stands right now, Michigan is set to play New Mexico week 1 of the regular season, and they're going on the road to Oklahoma in week 2. That game bears significant implications, because not only is that going to be a big-time game between two big-time programs, but that's Sharon Moore's alma mater. As it stands right now, we don't know what the NCAA is going to do, if they're going to come in and give another suspension to Sharon Moore, or maybe induce further penalties on the Michigan football program. But as it stands right now, all we know is that Sharon Moore and Michigan self-imposed suspension for weeks 3 and 4, which would be week 3, Michigan plays against Central Michigan. Now, that is quite ironic, because I'm sure you've seen the famous photo that has kind of floated around on the interwebs of a man that looks like Connor Stallions in a Central Michigan attire on the sidelines conducting in-person scouting. I'm sure you've seen that picture. I can visualize it in my mind. It was in the Netflix documentary, if you happen to watch it by chance. But that is ironic because that's Michigan's week three opponent. And that was one of the pictures we have of Connor Stallions as he was in the middle of his in-person scouting. And week four, Michigan is playing Nebraska, which is the start of Big Ten regular season play. So you're looking at all this, and now, like I mentioned, the NCAA could come and drop the elbow from the top rope if they wanted to and give a even further punishment to Michigan. But as of right now, we don't know if they're going to do that. But what Michigan was hoping to accomplish by suspending Sharon Moore for those two games versus Central Michigan and Nebraska, they were trying to punish themselves, quote-unquote, rightly, in hopes of avoiding a more serious punishment from the NCAA. So they're hoping that the NCAA sees that, hey, we've done our own investigation on the Connor Stallions saga. We're self-imposing this two-game suspension to Sharon Moore. I don't think we deserve any more punishment than that. Because the NCAA and Michigan, they already punished that 2023 team by suspending Coach Jim Harbaugh on separate occasions. Michigan is hoping that the NCAA doesn't come in and give another punishment. So that is the first thing that they're trying to do. Now, I've seen the comments that, well, if Sharon Moore is picking the days that he's suspended, is it really a suspension or is it more of a vacation? I've seen the comments like that, and trust me, I understand. Because I saw this headline too when I read it this morning, and I was also thrown off by it. But first of all, it's just really ironic that they're playing against Central Michigan in week three. But then you look at week four and they're playing Nebraska, and say what you want about Nebraska, they have had their down years in the past, but I believe that this is a team that is trending up under Matt Rhule. We all know the year three Matt Rhule effect. I've talked about that in previous shows. Isn't this a slap in the face to Nebraska that Michigan has chosen to suspend Sharon Moore for week four against Nebraska? I don't think Nebraska is going to be a cupcake game by any means. Nebraska's always had a super strong defense. I believe that Dylan Raiola is going to take the next step in year two. I believe that Nebraska is going to be a good team in 2025. So I'd be awfully concerned if I'm Michigan suspending Sharon Moore for week four against Nebraska. But that's just me. I'd rather suspend him for, if you're going to pick the dates, why not suspend him week one against Fresno State and then week three against Central Michigan if that's what you choose to do so? Because I know the significance of Sharon Moore being able to coach at Oklahoma in week two. I get that. That's his alma mater. But it's just really funny that the dates were hand-selected for him and why that week four date was happened to be one of those days. Now, the thing about this suspension is Sharon Moore is going to be banned from any team-related duties during those weeks that he's suspended, and further recruiting-related penalties will be enforced by Michigan. This is because of Jim Harbaugh. When Jim Harbaugh was suspended during his final season with the Wolverines in 2023, because of the Connor Stallions scandal, Jim Harbaugh still coached the team during practice throughout the week. So Michigan's not allowing Sherrone Moore to be able to be with the team during those weeks of his suspension because of Jim Harbaugh. So that's that. But to be honest, I'm pretty sick of talking about this. I know you're probably sick of hearing about it because it's been circulating in the media for well over a year and a half. And regardless of what side you're on, I don't believe that there's going to be enough evidence to prove how much this scandal actually helped Michigan in terms of winning. Now, I watched the Netflix documentary. I've read plenty of articles. I've done my research. Was Stallions guilty? 100%. Do I condone the fact that Connor Stallion chose to operate this way? No, I do not. Do I think the sign stealing impacted Michigan winning the national championship in 2023? Absolutely not. Because I watched that team in 2023. They had multiple guys drafted that following season of them winning the national championship. The talent on that roster, the development of the players by the coaching staff was off the charts. And by the time the 2023 season rolled around, everybody had already known about this Connor Stallion scandal because it was leaked before the season started. Jim Harbaugh was suspended. You basically handicapped Michigan that season because of the Connor Stallion situation. And yet they still rattle a 15-0 season and a national championship ring is being placed on their finger. I don't think, now this is with the information I have, my opinion can always change based on new evidence, new information that is presented. But with the information we have right now, there is not enough evidence to prove that this Michigan team wasn't capable of winning that national championship, even if they didn't have Connor Stallions. Because, like I said, I watched that team. The talent was off the charts. The coaching staff, tremendous. And now we see guys like Jim Harbaugh and Jesse Minter in the NFL. And they significantly helped the Los Angeles Chargers last year. Now, say what you want about their playoff performance, I know. But that team was extremely talented. And they absolutely were capable of winning that national championship without all the Connor Stallions mess. But that doesn't excuse the fact that Stallions is guilty and that this happened. And I know there are going to be a lot of mixed opinions on this. I'm well aware. But I'm ready to move on. And to pour a little salt in the wound, I don't know if you saw this news. My guess is probably not. But the University of Florida is in search of a new president for the university, and they're actually closing in on current Michigan president, Dr. Santa J. Ono. So that pours a little bit of salt in the wound for Michigan. So, and I also forgot to mention a little bit earlier in the segment, Connor Stallions actually has a court case hearing set for June 6th and June 7th. So hopefully we're going to get closer to the end of this because I'm ready to move on. And we will move on as we move merrily along. So, is there an executive order coming to help regulate NIL? Because you have reason to believe so. I don't know if you saw last week, President Donald Trump gave a commencement speech at the University of Alabama at their graduation. Nick Saban, there was a video, I actually saw it on Twitter. Nick Saban actually had a little opening speech that kind of introduced Donald Trump. While Trump was there, he had hopes of talking to Nick Saban about the state of college football, the state of NIL, and Trump hopes to explore an executive order related to college sports in order to regulate name, image, and likeness. Now, let it be known that I was one of the very last people to admit that college sports needs congressional intervention with the way things are going on right now. Now, if you would have asked me that 5 years ago, I would have said, heck to the no. I don't want government to get involved in college football. I don't want Congress to get involved. But with the way things have been going, the fact that there's no commissioner for college football, the fact that the NCAA lost its spine, something's got to give, because I'm worried about the deterioration of college football. Now, you know the saying that Rome wasn't built in a day. I believe the same is true about college football. College football has been built over decades and decades and a couple centuries. So I don't believe that, you know, the last 5 years can necessarily tear down the sport, because I'll show up regardless. I'll watch spring football. I'll watch the Holy War kick off at 9:30 Central Time on a Saturday night in October. I love college football. I'll watch any game. And that's why I think we need congressional intervention now, because there is no leader. There is no one driving the ship. There is no one at the wheel. And I believe it's a last resort. Again, 5 years ago, Parker Kelly would not have said, we need Congress to intervene. And it kind of makes me a little sick to my stomach trying to say that, but I believe that's what's best for the sport as it stands right now. And now, I know I joke about, you may think it's a joke, I may think it's a joke, who knows at this point. I've talked about being college football commissioner. I've talked about being in college football offense. Now, if you would like to vote for me to be in college football office, I'm not opposed. But Nick Saban, I believe, would be the perfect candidate, and I'd happily support him and back him. And a lot of you, a lot of people in general, have called for Nick Saban to be the future commissioner of college football. So when Nick Saban saw Donald Trump at the University of Alabama's commencement ceremony, you know, he was urging Donald Trump to come undo this damage to college football, to college sports in general, that has been caused by the free flowing of money. Now, regardless of your political affiliation, because to be frank, I don't care. And this is about as political as we're going to get on this show, because we're not here to talk politics. We're here to talk college football. But there are two things that are true about this. Donald Trump has a background as a businessman. And two, Donald Trump loves football. I've seen him at several games. He was at the Georgia-Alabama game last season. He's been to NFL games. Donald Trump loves football. Nick Saban also loves college football, and you can't deny that. He has been advocating, whether it be College Game Day or different media appearances he's made, he is one of the biggest advocates for the sport. And not only that, his voice carries a lot of weight. Nick Saban is, in my book, the greatest college coach of all time. He has an argument, in fact, to be one of the greatest football coaches of all time. But I'm not going to get into all of that. But regardless, Nick Saban's voice carries a lot of weight. He left when he retired from college football. It was a shell shock to the rest of the college football community. And I believe we're still trying to figure out who has that powerful voice like Nick Saban has in today's college football. Some may say Kirby Smart. Others may say a guy like Dan Lanning or a Dabo Sweeney. Heck, even a Deion Sanders. I know a lot of you have different opinions on him, but you can't deny that his words get attention. But regardless, Nick Saban loves college football. And I don't think any of you, or at least many of you, would disagree that he would be a perfect college football commissioner. And now he's potentially going to work with Donald Trump on getting an executive order for NIL. Now, I love that college football is now getting the eyes of a lot of higher up people. I think what this move shows is us as Americans, there are a lot of super important things in life. And while college football is a game, it is the tradition and the pageantry and the association of different schools with their fan bases. It means a lot to a lot of different people. And I believe if you're anything like me and you're anything like these fans, you don't want to see the product of college football go away, because college football provides an escape for all of us, whether we're trying to escape different things at work or family troubles or what have you. College football and sports in general really provide that escape. But college football means something to a lot of different folks. So I'm glad that this is getting the attention of a presidential type. Now, are there other things wrong with our country? Again, I'm not going to get into all of that. But I'm glad that this is getting a little bit of spotlight, because I believe that this just has to be fixed. And nobody will disagree with me on that. Anyway, we move along. Did you see the news about Georgia football? No, they didn't have another player arrested for driving, for whatever. They actually are getting a 5-star quarterback in Nashville Christian's Jared Curtis. Now, what's kind of funny about this is, so Jared Curtis is the quarterback at Nashville Christian, a rising senior this year. He originally committed to Georgia, decommitted, and then recommitted today. So I had a high school football show later last year, and I made it a point to get Nashville Christian's head coach Jeff Brothers on the show. And I wanted to talk about Jared Curtis a little bit. Why did he decommit from Georgia? And Coach Brothers' response was basically, Jared has been getting a lot of attention from a lot of different schools. I mean, you would figure if he's a 5-star quarterback, the number one quarterback in the 2026 class, the number 6 prospect according to On3, you would figure he's getting a lot of attention. But he just wanted to do his due diligence to make sure that he's making the right decision, not only for his football career, but for his future. And clearly he felt like Georgia was the best fit, and I believe this is a huge win for the Bulldogs. Now, Jared Curtis is a 6'4", 225 pocket passer. Now, Oregon went after him super hard. I believe this was a two-team race between Georgia and Oregon. And Georgia now secures Jared Curtis today. They have the 7th-ranked recruiting class that includes 1 5-star in Jared Curtis, 5 4-stars, 1 3-star. And this is all according to On3. But Georgia's also in the mix for the number one overall player in the country in Jackson Cantwell, an offensive tackle out of Nixa, Missouri. And you know who else is also after Cantwell? Oregon. So it'll be the second race we've seen between Georgia and Oregon as far as going after a particular prospect. But this is a huge win for the Georgia Bulldogs because I've watched Jared Curtis. I've seen him play. I've watched his film a little bit. I've watched his highlights. This is a big-armed kid with can throw from almost any arm angle. He has a cannon for an arm. And also, he's got some pretty good athleticism for a kid with his size. And I think his athleticism kind of gets slept on by a lot of different recruiters and people who've watched him play. But I've seen a lot of comparisons to Jared Curtis, to Garrett Nussmeier, and I think those comparisons are pretty accurate because Garrett Nussmeier is also a gunslinger. Jared Curtis is 100% a gunslinger. But I would definitely say that Jared Curtis is more agile than Garrett Nussmeier was. I've also seen comparisons to Stetson Bennett. I would say that that is fair because Stetson Bennett was also sneaky athletic. But the thing with Jared Curtis is, yes, he is athletic, but he also has a big frame, has a really strong arm. So if you kind of combine Garrett Nussmeier and Stetson Bennett, I'd say that you would get Jared Curtis. And Jared Curtis, I'm really happy for him. He's a really fun player to watch. And I believe that this was a huge win for the Georgia Bulldogs in the 2026 class. Again, they have the 7th-ranked recruiting class. But they're continuing to go after highly rated recruits. I know they have some visits scheduled with some big-time names coming up. But, again, Georgia recruiting is just getting started in 2026, and I know they have some more momentum down the stretch. So I hinted at the top of the show that I have expectations for a certain SEC team in 2025. I wanted to talk about expectations for LSU in 2025. If I asked you what you expect from the LSU Tigers in 2025, what would you say? I'll tell you what I think. So last season they went 9-4, which was good enough for 4th. In the SEC. I'm not always one to believe that momentum carries over from year to year, but I believe LSU has a solid chunk of production from last year's roster carrying over to this year. I want to go over their 2025 schedule. So they open, and this will actually be, I'm really looking forward to this game, but they open at Death Valley. No, not the Death Valley in LSU, but the Death Valley in South Carolina as they're taking on the Clemson Tigers. That'll be Saturday, August 30th. That's going to be a tough game. I'm going to talk about Clemson in future shows, but I believe Clemson, and you can laugh all you want to. I'm sure there will be some of you who are laughing. But I think Clemson is a legitimate player for the national championship in 2025, and I will get to that in future episodes. But LSU opens at Clemson week one of the season. Then 2 weeks later, they're at home versus Florida. Now, it is a benefit that they are at home because I believe Florida is going to be another really good team this year. Fringe playoff team, might I add. And then 2 weeks later, LSU travels to the SIP to take on the Ole Miss Rebels. So, Clemson, Florida, and Ole Miss, they get all three of those teams within the first 5 weeks of the regular season. Two of those games against Clemson and Ole Miss, both on the road. I think that is a tough start to the season for LSU. But if they can get two out of the three, heck, three out of the three would be really overachieving. But if they can get two out of the three there, I believe that that is a solid, solid start to the season. Then they have South Carolina. They're at Vanderbilt. versus Texas A&M, their next three games. They have Alabama on the schedule, and then they end the season in Norman, Oklahoma, to take on the Sooners. Not exactly a light schedule for LSU, but again, we got to consider the talent that they have coming back. They return quarterback Garrett Nussmeier, which I'm very excited to watch this year. Here's the thing about Garrett Nussmeier is he'd had a little bit of playing experience before last season. But last season was really his first full-time season as the starting quarterback for LSU. Now, there is no newness going into 2025 since he's already had that season as a starter. And I'm really excited to see the leap he takes from year one to year two in the offensive scheme under Joe Sloan, the offensive coordinator. Not to mention, let's talk about LSU defensively. That's something that's been a huge struggle for the Tigers over the last two seasons. But if you remember, at the start of last season, they went out and hired Missouri's defensive coordinator and Blake Baker. And he improved that defense in year one significantly. This was a defense that we're talking about ranked in the hundreds in terms of defensive statistics. And they significantly improved because they were in the 50s when it comes to total defense last season. So not exactly where you want to be. That's not the end goal by any means as far as LSU's defense is concerned. But if we're talking about going from the hundreds to 50s in year one under a new defensive coordinator, I'd say that that's a win. Now, can they take a leap the next season? I believe that they can. They return linebackers Whit Weeks and Harold Perkins Jr. Both of those guys decided to come back. They just got a transfer safety from Houston in A.J. Halsey, who is an all Big 12 caliber safety. I believe that that was a huge, huge get for LSU that only bolsters the defense. They also had the number one transfer portal class in 2025, added some big-time receivers for Garrett Nussmeier and Nick Anderson from Oklahoma, Berrian Brown in Kentucky. They returned wide receiver Aaron Anderson from last year's squad, who is a deep ball burner. Here's my question for LSU offensively, because I don't question if they can throw the ball. I know they can throw the ball. Can they run the football? That's the question. Last year, Caden Durham, who's a freshman, he really emerged late down the stretch. Will he take another step? That is yet to be seen. LSU really struggled running the football last year. If they can get a little bit better running the football and then take another giant leap defensively under Blake Baker, and then you mix in the pass game with these new weapons at wide receiver, I believe LSU can be a legit playoff contender this year. Now, their over-under win total is 8.5, according to FanDuel, heavily juiced to the over. I like the over. I think LSU, I'm really excited, and I have really high expectations for this team. I'm going to do an episode talking about my preseason top 25. Wouldn't be surprised if LSU is a top 10 team, but I will not spoil the surprise because I know you're looking forward to that. Moving right along, some news broke, I believe it was Friday of last week, that Clemson is getting a new addition to their football team. Now, it's not a high school recruit. In fact, it's not even somebody from the transfer portal, because we know how Dabo Swinney feels about the transfer portal, although he has used it a little bit more this year. But Ian Sheflin, who was a Clemson basketball player, is now going to be a member of the Clemson football team. I think this is really interesting because Ian Sheflin is a guy who has played 4 years for Clemson basketball, averaged 12.5 points per game, 9.5 rebounds, a big piece of the Clemson basketball team the last two seasons. He actually ran out of eligibility in basketball, entered the portal, which has kind of become a trend in college basketball, where if you run out of eligibility, you enter the portal in hopes of gaining a fifth year of eligibility depending on what's to come with the House settlement. Now, Shefflin was a guy that entered the portal to wait and see if he could get a fifth year of eligibility. Those chances of getting that year were pretty slim. But Ian Shefflin has now committed to play football. And I saw this news, and to be honest, I was just really confused, because if you run out of eligibility in basketball, how do you have eligibility to play football? I actually talked with a buddy about this, and I guess depending on the sport, you have four years of eligibility with one sport, but you have extra years if you decide to play a different sport. I don't really know. I'm not familiar with all this. But apparently there is eligibility out there for Ian Shefflin to play football at Clemson. Now, Ian Shefflin was a huge piece of the Clemson basketball team the last two seasons especially. But Dabo Swinney, who's the head coach at Clemson, joked with him, I think it was one time back in October, that he could make a really good tight end. Now, Ian Shefflin, you know, probably laughed it off, but eventually ended up thinking about it long enough, and now he's playing football. So, let's talk about Clemson from a roster construction standpoint. They lost their tight end, Jake Brenningstuhl, who signed as an undrafted free agent with the Kansas City Chiefs. The room is looking very thin for the Tigers, and I think Ian Shefflin can make a successful switch to tight end. Here's why. Ian Shefflin has really good feet, because I've also watched him play basketball. He's shown the ability to catch balls in traffic, and what I mean is he's caught lobs on the Clemson basketball team. He's caught lobs in traffic and thrown them down. So I think that part of his game will translate very well to tight end. He's 6'8", well over 250 pounds. Good feet, can catch in traffic. Tight end's also not the only possibility for Ian Shefflin. Dabo Swinney mentioned that maybe he could make a good defensive end, maybe even be a good offensive tackle. But as for right now, I think tight end is probably the realistic possibility, and I'm really excited to see how this goes. Now, it was reported that Ian Shefflin actually spoke with Mo Alie-Cox, who is one of the tight ends for the Indianapolis Colts. Alie-Cox played 4 years of men's basketball at Virginia Commonwealth, also known as VCU. And he made the switch from football to basketball, from basketball to football, despite not having played basketball since his freshman year of high school, I believe. And now he's in year 8 with the Colts. Other players have also made this successful transition from basketball to football. Greg Paulus, he was a guy that played basketball at Duke, and he became the starting quarterback at Syracuse in 2009. Jimmy Graham, Julius Peppers, two names that you will recognize. They played both sports in college before becoming all-pro NFL type players. Antonio Gates played basketball at Kent State for 4 years. He gave football a try, and now he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer as of February, or is soon to be one. So there's evidence out there that players have been able to make the switch from basketball to football and do it successfully. Ian Shefflin has a history of playing football. I believe he played quarterback in high school before deciding to focus on football basketball full-time. But the traits that Ian Shefflin showed playing basketball, I believe, will translate pretty well to the football field. And despite the confusing eligibility aspect of it, I'm very excited to see how this works out for him. Now, a couple more segments to go, but before I get into that, I need a sip of water. I have to let, for those of you that are wondering, I have to let you know that I'm taking a sip of water before I do it, so that you don't just hear dead air and think that the show's over, because we still have a little bit more show to go. Okay, is UNLV the new Last Chance U in FBS football? You may not have realized this, but I'm just going to go through UNLV's roster, and you'll start to recognize some names. Justin Flo, linebacker, former five-star recruit, played at Oregon and Arizona. He's now on the roster at UNLV. Denver Harris, former five-star corner, committed to Texas A&M out of high school and is now on UNLV. JoJo Earl, a wide receiver out of Alabama, former four-star recruit, is now on UNLV. Alex Orji, who's the quarterback in Michigan last year, former four-star recruit, he is now on UNLV's roster. Jake Pope, a safety, also played at Bama, former four-star recruit. Coy Moore, former four-star wide receiver, was on LSU's team last season. That's two five-stars and five former four-stars, all of which were highly notable coming out of high school and also did some things successfully at the college football level. All of those players are on UNLV's roster for 2025. And their head coach, Dan Mullen, he's back in the game, baby. Dan Mullen is the new coach at UNLV. And he's got some talent to work with. And this was a team that played in the Mountain West championship game against Boise State this past season. Was it legitimate playoff contender? And they were certainly talked about as such throughout the season. And now they bring in a coach in Dan Mullen who has had previous stops in the SEC at Mississippi State and Florida. You give him a roster full of highly rated profiled guys. Is UNLV the new last chance U? Some are saying it is. I certainly think it's interesting, and I'm excited to see what Dan Mullen is able to do at UNLV this upcoming season. All right, one more thing to get into on tonight's show. This is a topic that I'm not happy to talk about. In fact, I'm pretty regrettable at this point. But I just wanted to share some quick thoughts on the Bill Belichick situation because I know you've seen it, I've seen it, we've all seen it. I wanted to avoid this as much as possible, but I can't help it. It's been thrown in our faces. I'll keep it brief. I'll start out by saying his personal love interest, none of my business, nor do I really care all that much. But when these interviews are being done on TV for the whole world to see, and you can't help but see it, I can't help but see it, none of y'all can help but see it, you should expect that there will be opinions. And trust me, there have been plenty. And I believe a general consensus believes that this is a strange situation, to put it lightly. I believe a lot of us are tired of seeing it. I am certainly in that category of people. Now, I won't necessarily speak on the reports I've seen of Jordan Hudson, but they make me believe that this has future 30 for 30 written all over it, because if you've read some of the reports about Jordan Hudson's previous life experiences, it's interesting. But here's what I really take away from all of this. Bill Belichick from 10 years ago, do you think he would recognize the Bill Belichick that we know today? Because when you and I think of Bill Belichick from 10 years ago, we think of the guy with the cutoff hoodie, coaching the New England Patriots, doesn't tolerate any crap from anybody. And then we see today that when Bill Belichick had his interview with CBS, he was promoting a book that he had written. He's dating a woman who's significantly younger than he is. He is allowing his significant other to be CC'd on all UNC football emails. she's in charge of a lot of the decisions that are made regarding and surrounding Bill Belichick. Do you think Bill Belichick from 10 years ago, again, would recognize this person? Because there's no way in heck you do. I certainly, to be honest, I told you I would keep it brief. But this is all just so strange to me. And I'm also ready just to move on from this, because the only time I want to talk about Bill Belichick in the future is what he's been doing at North Carolina and what he did for North Carolina this season and in the future. I told you, super jam-packed show today. No offseason in college football. I will have another episode coming up for you here within the next week or so. There's going to be plenty to talk about as we continue to get closer and closer to the start of the 2025 college football season. Trust me, if you've been checked out of college football, it's time to rein back in, because we're getting closer and closer. Again, if you haven't already, please subscribe to The Game Nashville, where you will get each and every episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Also, make sure to follow me on the socials at Parker_Kelly10. Always a pleasure talking college football. We'll have another episode here for you shortly, and I'll talk to you soon.